Terry, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Oh, pleasure as always, Tess.
So we've already begun to see movement from Tony Abbott and Peter Dutton in light of the 30 news poll margin. Do you think that there is any realistic chance of a move being made on Malcolm Turnbull?
Well, certainly Barnaby Joyce said that if Malcolm Turnbull is still struggling at Christmas, he should do the honourable thing and resign. And maybe that's an option that has to be considered at the appropriate time. But I don't think the appropriate time is now. The bottom line is there is no convincing candidate to replace Malcolm Turnbull except a woman called Tina. And Tina stands for there is no alternative. Tony Abbott, I think has done his dash in terms of his pop-up interventions over the last 12, 18 months or so, which have really cheesed off many of his colleagues, and I don't think he'd get support in the party room. Peter Dutton is liked by his colleagues, but he's not really widely liked much beyond the party room itself. So Peter is a good guy. He's very intelligent. He's very smart. He's committed and passionate. But frankly, I don't see him as a prime minister, and I suspect most of the Australian public don't either. Julie Bishop, well, you know, her colleagues are divided on Julie Bishop because she's in 10 years as deputy leader, she just sidles up to the side of whoever is the leader and gives them 100% loyalty until they're dumped, and then she basically dumps on everybody else, and as she did yesterday with Tony Abbott, and denigrating him as a disruptive backbencher. So, and Scott Morrison, well, he's the treasurer, but he's not really set the world on fire. So, frankly, Malcolm Turnbull's probably surviving because there is no alternative. Simple as that.
And I suppose as well, you know, nobody's more qualified to speak about resigning than Barnaby Joyce, just as a side note I want to put
in there.
Well,
he's resigned twice in 6 months. He's done rather well, hasn't he?
He's an expert on it.
Well said.
So a couple of weeks ago as well, a bunch of ministers, including a bunch that you just mentioned there, they did come out. They're saying they're going to back Turnbull, regardless of whether or not the ominous 30 was reached, which, of course, it was. Do you think that this support, I suppose, you know, as you said, is it because there's no one else, or is it because there's some genuine support there?
Well, I think there is some feeling in the cabinet and in the coalition party room that you just can't keep the revolving door revolving, and that, like it or not, Malcolm Turnbull is the man who is there when, you know, they've deemed that the music has stopped, and he will take them to the next election, I suspect, unless there's some great catastrophe, either politically or to Turnbull himself. Look, my sense is that some of those ministers, like Matthias Cormann and Josh Frydenberg, were actually rusted on Abbott supporters who voted and lobbied very hard against Malcolm Turnbull becoming Prime Minister. But in the end, they've knuckled down, become part of Turnbull's team. And I think we've got the higher interest of the Liberal Party and the country, actually, at heart as well, in terms of wanting stability. It's better to go down united than to contest an election campaign divided and fighting amongst yourselves, and basically ensuring that all that Malcolm Turnbull is a seat warmer for Bill Shorten.
And, you know, speaking of the next election and stability, you know, if it all was to hit the fan and there was another leadership change, what sort of look would that be for the Liberal Party, do you think?
Well, it would show that it doesn't know whether it's Arthur or Martha. The Liberal Party can't govern itself, doesn't have a clear sense of its direction, its values. It certainly doesn't have a clear sense that it's there for a higher purpose than just hang on to office. And really, my sense is what the Liberals and or the Coalition should be doing is to focus on getting the upcoming budget right, telling a good story in that budget, both economically and in terms of policy generally, so they can actually go to the people over the next 12 months and say, well, look, we do know what we're on about. We actually are doing a half-reasonable job, and they've got some good economic things to talk to, including the number of jobs that have been created since the Coalition was elected back in 2013. But they can also say, we have a vision for the future. We aren't just seat warmers. We're here to make Australia a better place, and this is how we're going to do it. And that's what has been totally lacking, I think, from the Coalition for far too long.
And so across the aisle, you know, what sort of response have we been seeing from Labor?
Well, all they've been doing is turning up for work, isn't it? I mean, they don't have to do anything else. I mean, it's the old classic case of governments lose elections, not oppositions win them, because Bill Shorten, to be fair, is about as popular as a part in a lift as well as Malcolm Turnbull. So it's it's a real problem for them if they get into any bother, because Shorten isn't well-respected in the electorate. More to the point, the Labor Party never reformed itself after it lost in 2013. It's still dealing with its strong union links and some of the more unsavoury elements of that, like the leadership of the CFMEU. But more to the point, they've been running on a populist policy agenda really since the 2014 budget, when they all had to do was push back and say the opposite to Tony Abbott, Joe Hockey, and they won brownie points. And they almost won an election on that in 2016. They really haven't changed their position since then. And what we need, Tess, is on both sides of politics, we need governments and opposition to actually talk about constructive policy, constructive ideas, and are prepared to actually ensure that there is change for the better, even if there are going to be losers from it. And that's where Labor has not been doing anything responsibly for some years, because if you look at Labor's policy offerings, except perhaps for things where they think they're actually attacking the Liberal base, like the recent announcements on dividend imputation and small and medium super funds, or self-managed super funds, sorry. Really, it's all about, we feel your pain, we're going to kiss it better and throw lots of money at it. Mediscare was a good example of that in 2016, and they haven't really changed their spots on that. So until Labor comes up with a responsible policy platform that involves making tough decisions about spending, not spending actually, as well as spending more and more as the opinion polls say they should, until they can show they can be a responsible government, they're not ready for government. This is the part that really frustrates me. We've got a government that's not governing very well, and we've got an opposition that basically presses populist buttons and doesn't want to take responsibility. So it's like Tweedledum and Tweedledee, Tess.
Rocking a hard place by the sounds of it, honestly.
Absolutely.
It's been a wild one to watch, but it does sound like the budget, I guess, is where a lot of this, hinges on, especially for, polls over the next few months.
Well, that's right. If the budget is responsible, if it's well-received, if it's explained well, and that includes putting the big-ticket items that are already out there, such as the proposed company tax cuts, into a better context so people actually understand why they're doing it and why it may actually be beneficial. This government is not very good at selling itself. It's not very good at explaining what it does. And if it actually does get its act together, if it actually comes up with a decent budget and has a good story to tell, Bill Shorten and Labor shouldn't count their chickens. But, after the last 12 months, I've got my strong doubts that the government is up to the job of doing that. But I am here, I'm ready, I'm willing and able to be proved wrong.
And fingers crossed that perhaps you will be. Terry, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tess.